It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
Say whatever you want about all the football stats and all the fantasy.
Paul Charchian.
He's a fantasy football genius, okay?
Hey, fantasy world, yours truly.
CEO of GuillotineLeagues.com.
It's just a fantasy. Oh, it's not a real thing. Oh.
I think it's pretty easy to keep my fantasy football life away from my real life.
Taking your fantasy questions every week.
You know, if you're one of those people like, hey, I got you on my fantasy football team, because I don't care about your fantasy football team. But your fantasy football team probably sucks.
Paul Charchian with Danny Parkins.
It's a fantasy football thing.
On 670 The Score.
With Rami Makhlouf in all week, it is the Danny Parkins Show. Paul Charchian every Thursday at 3 o'clock, even though there is no Thursday night football tonight. Still never too early to look ahead to setting your Week 6 lineup. He's on the Alpamonte Nissan Hotline, Alpamonte Nissan in Melrose Park. What's up, Charch?
Hey, good to talk to you. I love that there's no Thursday, and I like the Tuesday format. In fact, more people watch Tuesday night football than Monday night football. And you would just think from the standpoint of keeping the flow of the week, if the NFL really wants to own a weeknight, another weeknight of football, instead of it being Thursday, which is right in the middle of the week, why is it not Tuesday? So they can go Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. The players don't have their week interrupted. You know, you would think that would make more sense. And we had a lot of viewers on Tuesday night.
I just fear change. Charge. I'm fine with adding Tuesday, but I don't know that I now want to lose Thursday.
Yeah,
I'm ready for football, seven days.
I told Danny I like the NFL on my TV at least four nights a week. I'll take seven if they can find some way to put that schedule puzzle together. But four nights a week is outstanding as long as they can do it.
Charge.
They probably could.
They probably could. All right. So I picked up. I won the waiver bid for Chase Claypool. I think I may be overbid.
All right.
Give me some names like Terry McLaurin, T.Y. Hilton, Jamison Crowder. I don't know. Like how high up the wide receiver rankings are you willing to install Chase Claypool?
Well, he's pretty high this week because and we don't know yet for sure if Deontay Johnson's going to play. But clearly Deontay Johnson leaving last week's game right off the bat played into his four touchdown game. So you know that's certainly a part of it for Chase Claypool. But here's the thing. And you know, he might play not have another four touchdown game. He's really legit. Based on what we saw in college, Danny, he's just scratching the surface at the NFL level. All the amazing catches, the leaping ability, the contested catches. The kid's going to be really, really good. And the only thing I think that holds him down from a fantasy standpoint is he's going to be competing with looks with Deontay Johnson and Juju Smith-Schuster for, you know, at least the immediate time being. And I do like him a lot this week, and it's a very favorable matchup against a Cleveland secondary that's still without Greedy Williams, Denzel Ward up. So, yeah, that's I think he's absolutely startable this week ahead of a lot of big name regular contributing players, including Terry McLaurin, which you just mentioned. And if I could segue for a minute, because you mentioned Jamison Crowder,
please.
Probably
I was just thinking of mid-tier receivers who I would like maybe think would be kind of in his range. I don't know. You're the expert.
Sure. Well, that's the point I'm going to make is maybe he's not so mid-tier. Probably the most under the radar superstar is Jamison Crowder, and he's a Jet. He's the only Jet you'd ever want to own on a per game basis because he's missed a couple games. He's second to DeAndre Hopkins in fantasy points. He's been targeted 10 times or more in every game. He's been over 100 yards in every game. And with New York, with the Jets, the game script is always tilted in Jamison Crowder's favor. He's behind. So, yeah, he has been uber reliable, and he's way up at wide receiver 12 this week against Miami.
Is he taking production and targets away from Juju Smith-Schuster? Because I can speak from firsthand experience that people who have Juju are not all that pleased with the production to this point outside of one or two good games.
Yeah, and, you know, he's scoring touchdowns, which has helped Juju a lot. You know, last week he did basically nothing for fantasy owners. And I think just running out of the slot, his routes are his own. And I don't think Claypool or Deontay Johnson take that much away from Juju on a game-in and game-out basis. I will say this long-term about Juju. And so if you're in a dynasty league or an empire league and you're already thinking about 2021 and beyond, Juju's coming up on free agency. They don't need him. They got Deontay Johnson on his rookie deal, and he's great. Chase Claypool on his rookie deal. He looks like he's great. James Washington is only in his second season, and he looks very promising. This Pittsburgh team will let receivers walk. They've proven it a dozen times. Juju Smith-Schuster is going to be elsewhere next year.
Paul Charchi and GuillotineLeagues.com, 312-644-6767. I've got a ton more questions for Charch, but we can get yours in as well. Mario in Oswego, start us off with Paul Charchian.
Hey guys, hey Paul. I got a quick, just very easy RB2 question. Do I start David Johnson or do I start Ronald Jones the second? I will hang up and listen. Thank you again.
David Johnson going up against Tennessee and Ronald Jones going up against Green Bay.
Yeah, we're going to take Ronald Jones in this scenario. He's up at running back in number 11, steadily improving. Seen his yards per carry output increase in four straight games up to 6.2 yards per carry last week, and that was against your Bears. The Packers are allowing 163 total yards and almost two touchdowns per game to opposing running backs. This is a very good opportunity for him. It looks like he's distanced himself from all the other runners that Tampa's got. So, yeah, I got a lot of trust in Ronald Jones in this one.
Tim in Barrington, you're on with Paul Charchian from GuillotineLeagues.com. Go ahead, Tim.
Afternoon, gentlemen. Thanks for taking the call. I have a half-point PPR, DJ Moore against the Bears, or I have Cooper Kupp against the 49ers. Thanks.
Nice stereotypical Chicago accent.
Yeah,
I loved it.
Yeah, that was very good. In Chicago, I don't think you normally get the regular accent right, which is Chicago. This is a good opportunity for Cooper Kupp, or at least a reasonably good one, and really for all the success the Panthers have had, three straight wins for the Panthers, Danny. It took them 14 games to get their previous three wins. So Teddy Bridgewater playing at a.
Is there anything we can do with Charch's connection? I'm not sure. It keeps breaking up on my end. I assume that's also going out.
Yeah, I'm hearing that too.
Over the air. Okay, yeah. We're going to try to reconnect with Paul Charchian from GuillotineLeagues.com. Yeah, DJ Moore's been inconsistent. Robbie Anderson has taken it, but DJ Moore is top 10 in the NFL, Rami, in air yards, which is a great stat for fantasy football heads. Like how far the ball travels when they throw it to you. Like Michael Gallup's way up there, even though his production's been down. Marquise Hollywood Brown is way up there, even though his production's been down. So that's an indicator that they're throwing it to you and they're throwing it to you down the field. Eventually, you're going to make those connections. Like
that's,
DJ Moore, Hollywood Brown, guys to buy low on.
DJ Moore is surprising that he's leading the league in air yards per reception, and not because he's not good or fast, but the guy throwing it to him, Teddy Bridgewater, never known for his deep ball. Like he's always been a guy who gets it out quick, takes the check down and sort of plays it safe. He's never been a guy known for the deep ball. So DJ Moore catching all those passes downfield, a little bit surprising to me.
Yeah, I don't think he's leading, but he's in the top 10. He's in the top 10, but his production is nowhere near top 10. I know they're throwing the ball down the field.
Oh, I know. I have him on one of my rosters. I'm aware of his production not being in the top 10. I'm well aware.
Well, yeah, and I was going to ask, we've got, you know, other guys coming in, and, you know, of course we got to get the Bears-Panthers matchup, and we're waiting on when Le'Veon Bell is going to sign. And so once we get Charch back on the line.
We got him on the phone, actually. I think we're good to go.
Yeah. Beautiful. Okay, what's up, Charch? Thanks for calling in.
Hi. Yeah, no, my pleasure. Yeah, we're back. I think you were still talking about DJ Moore, which is really impressive tap dancing for like 60 seconds on DJ Moore rattling
off.
Oh,
I got
DJ
takes
Moore.
On DJ Moore for at least 60 minutes. What do you want to know?
Very impressive. Yeah. He's he faces your Bears. No receiver has allowed more than 61. Has managed more than 61 yards against your team. And really, Robbie Anderson's turned into the go-to receiver for them, because when you leave Adam Gase, it turns out you're awesome. And that's what's happened with Robbie Anderson, who's become the much more viable of the two receivers there. So we're going to start him, we're going to bench him. We're going to go with Cooper Kupp to answer the question from several minutes ago.
Charge. Obviously, we don't know yet where Le'Veon Bell is going to be. The finalists, it seems, are the Dolphins, Bills, and Chiefs, with maybe some indications that the Bills are the slight favorite. How would you grade those landings?
Let me jump in on that landing spot, because it's pretty funny. So his side leaked those spots, right? That's what he's considering. The next three opponents against the Jets: Miami, Kansas City, and Buffalo.
I didn't even put that together.
That's amazing.
That's outstanding. So, that's petty, and I appreciate petty.
It really is petty, isn't it? So I don't know that there's anything legitimate to that at all. I think that was just more of a dig at the Jets. And all the Jets did wrong was pay him $40 million for two crappy seasons. You know, you'd think he would be magnanimous in leaving that team. No, apparently not. It's by the way, so almost anywhere he goes, it's not a great landing spot, because he's in a timeshare almost anywhere. I think Chicago's as good a spot for him to possibly go to, because you need depth and there's still something left. He's not anywhere near the athlete that he was in his last good season back with Pittsburgh in 1964. But I still think there's a little something left in the tank, and I think he would help that roster. If I could pick a landing spot, it would be Chicago.
Paul Charchian of GuillotineLeagues.com is on the Danny Parkin Show with Rami Makhlouf and Sean in Portage. You are on the Score with Paul Charchian. Go ahead, Sean.
Hey, thanks for taking my call this afternoon. Have to make a decision, PPR league, between two rookie receivers, either Justin Jefferson or CeeDee Lamb. Which way do I go? Thanks.
Okay, and we lost Paul Charchian. Can I get a "this is going great"? Justin Jefferson against the Falcons. CeeDee Lamb is going against the Cardinals. I'll answer that one for you and say Justin Jefferson.
Big fan of that kid, man.
Yeah, I mean, everyone scores against the Falcons. Their secondary is brutal. The Vikings, I guess both the Vikings and the Cowboys, are at home. And we just don't know what Andy Dalton is going to do. Like, you don't know.
This is going great.
Thank you. If his favorite guy is going to be Blake Jarwin or Amari Cooper, you don't know what Andy Dalton's going to look for. So I'd go with Justin Jefferson against the Falcons.
It's worth, me too. I mean, that's a slam dunk right there. You know, I love my fantasy sports.
Yeah, always have. You always say that. All right. Well, you know what? We'll connect with Charch next week. Let's just.
We got him here. So.
Oh, we do.
Are we going to try this one more time?
I mean, why not?
I mean, at this
let's
point,
give him three strikes.
Good habit.
Right.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Man. You remember the old days when I would connect on ISDN? It was crystal clear. It sounded like I was right next to you. Remember all those days?
Yeah,
what
why
happened
not?
To
why
that?
Aren't we doing that anymore?
Charge, do you know how much the ISDN phone bill costs?
Shut up. I was paying the ISDN phone bill on my side, $170 a month. That's how much it costs.
Oh, my God. Okay. What questions do I have for you? People want to know about Antonio Gibson. I'm seeing him on like 10 different text messages. What's your read on what the hell's going on with the Washington football team?
Yeah, right. So this is a Washington team that put up 108 yards of offense on the game and -6 yards of offense in the second half, which, you know, basically, you know, almost ruined the love fest that we had for Alex Smith and everything, you know, as much as that felt great. Antonio Gibson passes the eye test. He's really good. He's just, the rest of this offense is really bad, and this is a pretty good opportunity for him. I think he bounces back here. Running back number 14 against the New York Giants. Every running back with at least 10 touches against the Giants has averaged 91 yards and 1.5 touchdowns per game. So you figure Gibson's going to get those 10 touchdowns. This is still a bad run defense. Pass defense has gotten a lot better for the Giants. I like Antonio Gibson to bounce back nicely here.
If people have the handcuff, you know, Alex Mattison with your Vikings, how are we handicapping the Dalvin Cook situation?
No, well, you're starting Madison with confidence. That's what you're doing. He's my number four ranked running back this week.
Wow.
In a fantastic matchup with Minnesota. So Dalvin Cook's going to miss this game. Madison inherits his 21 touches per game. And the Falcons, they've been an okay run defense, but they get destroyed through the air, giving up 9 receptions to running backs for 63 yards through the air. So if Madison's going to get most of those 9 catches and 63 yards through the air, how does he not find his way to, I don't know, 120 yards and should score a touchdown on at least some part of that? So I love Madison this week, and he's sitting on a big game.
Are you downgrading Cowboys skill position players because of Andy Dalton?
Not much. I think Andy Dalton's going to be just fine. In fact, I think he's going to win comeback player of the year over Alex Smith and just all the weapons there. Dalton is a capable quarterback. Not great, capable. But he's also never been on an offense that has literally 6 viable targets in any one play. He looks left, and here's Amari Cooper. He looks right, there's Michael Gallup. He looks to the middle of the field, and here's his tight end, Dalton Schultz. Or maybe you've got potential rookie of the year winner, CeeDee Lamb, cutting across the middle. Or if none of that's working out, you just dump the ball off to Ezekiel Elliott. I don't know how you can fail in that situation. So I think Andy Dalton is going to be a startable fantasy commodity most weeks, including this week, with a positive matchup against the Arizona Cardinals, a team that struggles against the pass and has for a long time. Patrick Peterson is not a shutdown cornerback anymore.
They're on bye this week, but when the Saints return, does Michael Thomas go right back up to the top of the wide receiver rankings?
Yeah, because they've correctly not played him. Well, and by the way, we're assuming they don't suspend him for another game, but assuming that's the case, yes, he'll go right back to the top because they didn't make the mistake of playing him. And, that's where these ankle sprains go sideways, is when teams try to push a guy through it and then he just resets the injury and, you're out another month.
How worried are you about, not necessarily Drew Brees, because I think his fantasy numbers are somewhat capped at this stage in his career, but what Drew Brees is at this stage in his career and what that means for Michael Thomas and people who have him on their roster?
Yeah, I mean, clearly not playing as well as he used to, and the velocity's way down. And the fact that anytime they need to throw more than like 20 yards, they pull him out of the game entirely.
Right.
Yeah, that's a worry, I think. So, for Brees, he's devolved into a game by game fantasy question mark where you can't just start him every week like you have been throughout most of the rest of his career. And instead, you got to try to figure it out. And then, for Michael Thomas, I still think ultimately, his game was never like deep downfield bombs, right? That's never been his deal. He's always been turning medium routes into longer gains. And so I don't think Thomas is that affected by the arm strength, honestly.
All right. Anything that we missed, Charge? What are the big fantasy storylines this week that we might have missed?
Yeah. There are a couple things that we didn't have a chance to get to that I'd love to. Matt Ryan is borderline unstartable and probably maybe not even rosterable. He just came off the worst game of maybe his career, missing open receivers, not seeing open receivers, and when he sees them, he's misfiring. He's only Carson Wentz has more off-target passes than Matt Ryan does. And missing Julio Jones isn't an excuse for just not throwing the ball accurately to open receivers. And were it not for the fact that he's got Minnesota and Detroit, we'd be just talking about absolutely dropping him. But this is a very easy stretch for him, and that might be one of the reasons why you could keep him. And then lastly, how about Jonnu Smith? Can we just talk about
– that's your guy.
In the 10 years that I've been doing this show, I don't think I've ever had a better preseason call than Jonnu Smith. Number one among tight ends in fantasy points per game. Number one ranked tight end by Pro Football Focus. Number one in passer ratings on balls thrown to him. Number two among tight ends in yards after the catch. His bye week is behind him. His quarterback loves him. It's going to keep flowing for Jonnu Smith.
It was a great call.
Run that victory lap, Charge. Run that victory lap, sir.
Audio victory lap happening right now.
GuillotineLeagues.com. You can find all of his weekly positional rankings, and you should be playing in a guillotine league. It's the newest fad in fantasy football. Charge, it can't go worse next week. We'll do it again.
No. Sounds good. Bye-bye.
Thank you. That is Paul Charchian. Hey, Rami, we just added Sam Acho to the show.
Nice.
Just after 4 o'clock today. I don't know if you've ever talked to him.
I have not.
He's awesome. Very, very cool dude. He's he just wrote a book, Let the World See You, How to Be Real in a World Full of Fakes. His brother, obviously, Emmanuel Acho, is becoming a media star before our eyes over at Fox Sports 1 and his web series, Uncomfortable Conversations with a Black Man. But Sam Acho has done great work around the community. He converted a food mart in Austin.
Yeah, I saw that. That was amazing.
On the west side. So he's just... he's doing really, really cool things, and so we'll talk to him about how he is seeing post-retirement life in this book. That's coming up at 4 o'clock. But I've been wanting to have this conversation with you all week. I find it to be one of the most interesting conversations going on around an industry that I love, and that is comedy. You are a working, paid comedian. So we're going to talk about comedy in 2020
nice.
With Rami Makhlouf. Next on the show.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
Score.
I gotta tell you, the way white women somehow hijack the woke movement, generals around the world should be analyzing this. Just to refresh your memory, the woke movement was supposed to be about people of color not getting opportunities, the at-bats that they deserved, finally making that happen. And it was about that for about 8 seconds. And then somehow, white women swung their Gucci-booted feet over the fence of oppression and stuck themselves at the front of the line.
Bill Burr from this past Saturday Night Live monologue. Truly incredible.
That guy, man. Just amazing.
Had a story on the show yesterday that could kind of be related to that. We're not going to get into it, but, you know, I could
that was the first thing I thought of.
Yeah, yeah. It was among the first things I thought of. But Rami Makhlouf is an actual stand-up comedian. You get paid to make people laugh on stage. You've opened for Ari Shaffir. You've headlined shows before. You're a working stand-up comic. Tanny and I don't mean to exclude Shane.
What have we got here? Comedian.
Yeah, I don't mean to exclude Shane or Shep from it, but like Tanny loves it. He's gone to, you know, the Comedy Store on vacation in California and like centered some of his trip around it. I've been to the Cellar a bunch of times in New York. Like, we truly do love the industry that you're a part of. I won't color it with what my opinions of it are. I've listened to so many different comedians give their thoughts on it. I'm curious, what do you make of the medium in 2020 and like the conversation that happens around, honestly, like the attempt to censor and judge the jokes of comedians?
I don't think it's as bad as people make it out to be. I don't know that cancel culture is even a real thing, Danny. And I'm at Rami is tweeting if you want to fight me on that. I mean, who's really been canceled for something that they've said? There have been dudes who have been fired, sure, but they always seem to find somewhere else to land. And often that cancel culture, the cancel mob coming after me is just sort of a dog whistle for people to support somebody who's not a great person or at the very least said some not so great things. And I really think that we should be more sensitive to people and what hurts them and what offends them in stand-up comedy in 2020 and kind of work around that, man. Like, the only person you've ever had to worry about hurting or offending in stand-up comedy has been white men. That was the only thing that was going to cost you a job, that was going to stop you from going to the club the next time. You know what I mean? Because nobody else had a platform or had the power to step up and say, hey, not cool. You know what I mean? Like, brown people and black people and women and LGBTQ people never had a voice to, like, stand up and go, yeah, that's not something you should be saying about us. Like, that was just never an option before. And I think that people in those groups getting a voice and using that voice and changing the way that my profession is done is not a bad thing. I think that's a step forward and not a step back. And if you're one of those dudes who's catching a lot of blowback, instead of pointing a finger and going, cancel culture is trying to take me out and kill comedy, maybe adapt. Maybe take a look in the mirror and be like, yeah, maybe I'm getting cheap laughs. Maybe I'm going down roads that I shouldn't be going down because of my identity and who I am, and find different ways to make people laugh. And if you can't do that, you're probably not a very good comedian, is how I look at it. If that's what you were getting at, like the cancel culture and the sensitivities around comedy nowadays, I do think it crosses the line sometime and it goes too far and people are offended by things that maybe they shouldn't be offended by. But again, who am I to say that? Because every time I've said that, it hasn't been about me. You know what I mean? It hasn't been about me and what I'm offended by or what hurts my feelings. You know what? So I don't even know that I can say that it goes too far sometimes. In my personal opinion, there is a rare occasion where people overstep that line of being offended by something that's pretty harmless.
Yeah, I think, like, to be clear, like, I am very liberal and progressive, and people would call me soft, and, you know, like, all the, like, I am, like, overly sensitive to, did that offend you, or, oh, you, that word is not cool anymore, okay, like, let me learn, I didn't know about it, I had a blind spot with this thing. So, like, I am not offended by that part of the conversation at all, and I agree with you. Like, there's, like, Kevin Hart lost the Oscars, he didn't want to re-apologize and re-litigate jokes from 10 years before, but he didn't get canceled. He lost one job.
Yeah, he's still, like, doing movies. He's still super rich and successful. He didn't get canceled.
Right. Louis C.K. is still touring, it not in the biggest venues, and it's overseas, and he's selling stuff directly, but that wasn't for comedy. That was for actions, and also actions that he didn't apologize
for. I mean, somebody
who's
canceled, and I'm putting air quotes up right now, for something that they said in a comedy act.
Correct. It doesn't really happen, and so I'm totally with you on that. What I think is interesting, when I listen to a lot of comedians' podcasts, they talk about how, like, and I agree with them on this part, like, their ethos, their North Star, their job is funny. It's our job. You're coming to a comedy show. You're entering a comedy club. You're clicking on our Netflix special. You're opting in. This isn't like FCC airwaves. And also, I'm not an elected official. Like, I'm not making laws around these things. I'm trying to make fun of everybody and everything. And yes, it's absolutely funnier when you punch up, right?
Right.
At authority.
Right.
As opposed to punching down on the people who, like, the system and society have had the boot on their neck for generations and generations and generations. So obviously it's funnier and better when comedy is punching up at, like, the authority and the man and the system and that sort of thing. But I do believe that, like, if you're offended by a joke, just keep it moving. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you've opted in to, like, you've clicked on that Dave Chappelle special. You've clicked on that Bill Burr special. You've, Bill Burr's doing a monologue on SNL? Okay, so, like, if you were offended by his monologue, man, they brought him there to tell jokes. And sometimes jokes are going to be offensive. Sometimes jokes are not going to necessarily be, like, what the person truly believes, like what the person would vote on or anything like that. They're trying to find the humor in everything. And I'm a huge believer in satire. Like, in this country's history, it's part of the beauty of American history and satire and free speech. And you can, like, go on TV and make jokes about the president, no matter who's in office. And that's totally fine. There are plenty of countries in the world where you get imprisoned for that sort of thing. And so, like, the idea of people opting, like, I went to the comedy show. I clicked on the Netflix special. and then I didn't like your joke, and so now I'm outraged. I just like, what do you want, a refund? Like it's a subjective medium, right? Of like what is or isn't funny. So sometimes when I see criticism of like a Dave Chappelle special, I'm like, what? The guy's a genius, and you didn't like his take on fill in the blank issue or fill in the blank joke, but so therefore you're done with Dave Chappelle. Like that line of being blurred, of like forgetting that they're on stage joking and acting as if they're like political stump speeches and you're voting for these people or running for office, that's the part where I felt like there's a disconnect. Not that anybody can cancel Dave Chappelle, but that like sometimes people hold Dave Chappelle or Bill Burr or any fill in the blank comedian to a standard of political correctness that I look to, you know, politicians or companies, frankly, right? Like if you're hiring and firing people, I absolutely want to know about your biases and your hiring practices and all that sort of thing. Man, if you're a stand-up comedian telling jokes and you want to make jokes about fill-in-the-blank thing, like personally for me, I'm cool with it. And if personally for this person next to me, they're not cool with it, then fine. Just don't go to the show or don't opt into the special. So that's the thing that I found interesting, that people kind of hold comedians now to a standard of modern day philosophers. And so it seems like they're holding them to a standard that's unattainable for politicians.
That's probably fair. I would hold comedians when they're on stage to the same standard that I would hold anybody walking around in their day to day life. Like, you know, when you're crossing a line, or at least you should know when you're crossing a line. And just being a bad person and knowing that you're hurting people. Like what you're saying, Danny, is that sometimes when you're trying to be funny, people are going to get hurt. People are going to catch shrapnel or be caught in the crossfire, essentially, right, of you trying to be funny. But there are some times where a comedian, and again, this is the standard that I would hold anybody to, is like, are you saying something that you know is hurting somebody and you know who that person or who that group of people is?
Malice, and, right? You're talking about malice.
Exactly.
Like what's the intent?
The intent and the malice of it. If you're trying to be satirical and somebody misinterprets your satire, I think that's where you and I see eye to eye of like, okay, you're offended, but that doesn't warrant anything. Let's just keep it moving with your offense. And I'm going to live my life and you're going to live yours. But when somebody is clearly stepping a line and knows they're stepping a line, and like you said, punching down and intentionally hurting people, I don't think that's comedy at that point. I think that's bullying.
I agree.
Right.
I agree. Right. It's bullying. It's using a bully pulpit. It's punching down. We are in complete agreement with that. And you want that, like, you want to elevate the art to the moving line of like society, right? So like if you go back and watch Eddie Murphy Delirious and you watch it through a 2020 prism, it's unwatchable.
Right.
It is unwatchable. And it's hard to imagine that like this was the biggest comedy special arguably ever and the biggest comedian in the world. And Eddie Murphy has done some measure of apology and comeuppance for it. And if and ever he does get back on stage, I assume he will be a very different comedian and he'll be judged through the 2020 lens. I think something that's interesting, though, about like where we should have, again, a little bit of tolerance and leeway for the art form is when you guys are working something. Like I was reading this story about Bill Burr and that bit that he did on SNL. Man, the comedy clubs are not all open, right? So this is a guy who's been on the shelf largely for 6 months, that he was literally walking up to people in New York City. He went to New York for a week before SNL, and he was walking, and when people would recognize him, he was literally doing his bit.
Running material by him?
For people on the street.
But Dan, did you hear what else he did? Like, and that's certainly absurd. But he ran that set by a podcast audience. I think it was the Legion of Skanks podcast, or so. Yeah. Like, they're just there for a podcast taping, and in comes Bill Burr because there's a willing audience right there.
I don't know why I didn't think of that, because before my show last Friday, I hadn't been on stage in any way or even performed comedy, because they have like these Zoom open mics, and I never got into that. I hadn't been on a stage or performed comedy in 8 months. I wish I would have thought of just walking up to people on the street and running material by them. That would have made me feel a little better going into the show.
But so like to me, like when you see these stories of like fill-in-the-blank comedian gets booed at Comedy Cellar and people walk out and or like they leak footage of it
right.
and put it on the internet.
Right.
I'm like, whoa. Like, you're not – they're working something out. Like, if you want them to be able to tell a joke about fill-in-the-blank historical event, like, go back to – I'll make it about myself, right? I've laughed at Jewish jokes. I'm a Jewish person. But, like, there's obviously Jewish jokes that are offensive.
Sure,
but
that cross the line. Right.
Right, but there are Jewish jokes that are funny. But, like, it's not like Jewish jokes are outlawed. And so, like, how do you figure out where that line is? How do you figure out the tone? How do you figure out what is too harsh and what is too funny and what is just right? By practicing. And you can't practice. Like, you can sing in the shower if you're a singer. You can do a take for a radio show into a recorder and play it for nobody. For a comedian, you have to have the live audience for the feedback. And so, to me, that's just where, like, the leeway for your industry – and I don't even know if medium is the right like thing to call it, like your art, your genre, whatever. Like, there needs to be some leeway. And I think by and large there is, but like people just need to, I hope, understand it of like, man, sometimes these guys the humor is the line, right? It's
right.
Finding the line.
Right.
And so sometimes you're going to step over the line and get zapped and come back. But like that's if comedians can't walk up to that line and walk out on that tightrope, then comedy ceases to serve its purpose in a functioning society.
Yeah, I think it's about time and place. And if you're working out new material in a room of 18 or 20 people, and maybe you cross a line and you realize it right there and correct it the next time you go up on stage, all right, fine, because you're experimenting with stuff. It's practice. Going to open mics and working this material before you take it to actual shows is practice. To hold that against somebody and make a headline out of it would be like you open up the sports page and it's like LeBron James misses dunk in practice. You know what I mean? Like, it's practice, man. There are going to be screw-ups. That's where you learn from your mistakes, including – and now – I can honestly say, Danny, and I don't know if I just have a better barometer than people because of my experience of being, you know, a son of immigrants, and I have my own sensitivities around my culture and blah, blah, blah. If that just sort of naturally put this barometer in me, I've never walked away from a mic. In between stand-up comedy and hosting sports talk radio shows, I have 18 years of holding microphones and speaking into them, and I don't think I've ever walked out of a show or walked away from a set and going, man, was I just racist? Was I just misogynist? Was I just a homophobe? Like, I don't feel like I've ever even towed that line. I don't know if that makes me, like, not a good comic or if I'm not going as far as I should, but I seem to know where I can go and where I can't. And sometimes I see these stories and I'm like, dude, how do you know you can't go there? Like, how do I know that, but you don't? And again, that might have something to do with my life experience of living in America as a brown person, as a son of immigrants, that's been put in me. You know what I mean? And it's just sort of natural for me. And it's not fair to expect that from everybody, but it always blows my mind when I see some of the stuff that these guys say.
Yeah, sure. I agree with you, by the way. And like a texter says, Danny, you really need to practice to know what's offensive. Really? Man, you want comics to take risks. You want comics to operate outside of their comfort zone. Man, you think Bill Burr does that bit on white women 15 years ago?
No.
No chance. He didn't know. He didn't have as much of a worldview. He's married to a black woman. He's become good friends with Chappelle. He was a dude from Boston who was self-described as dumb. Like, you know what I mean? Like, he hadn't traveled anywhere. He hadn't met anybody outside of his name. You know what I mean? Like, he's learned. He's evolved. And so, like, it's an industry of pushing the envelope and trying new things. And what you were talking about earlier, I think, is like I just want people to always remember about comedy. I feel like the vast majority of the time. Are there examples opposite it? Sure. But like, I don't like to argue the exception. I'd rather talk about the rule. Like, you say, what's the intent?
Right.
It's jokes.
Exactly. That's what always come back to is the intent.
It's not malice.
Right. Yep.
Right? Like, they're trying to be funny. They might not be funny. They might not be funny to you, but they're trying to be funny. They're not trying to offend you. And I think that is a thing that's super valuable.
Can I tell you what my pet peeve is when it comes to, not people in the industry of stand-up comedy, but the consumption of stand-up comedy. And I've had this argument with friends of mine who have this mindset, and it's not in the clubs or in the bars. Most people who go to a comedy show are there to have a good time. They've paid money, yep, and they've gone through the trouble. They've gotten in the car. They got dressed up nice, and they went to the comedy club, and it's for a good time. But in other mediums where people consume comedy, Netflix, or wherever you're taking it in, I feel like, and this is somewhat a product of social media, everybody's a critic. Like, instead of sitting down like you would at a comedy club and, hey, I'm here for a good time, and let's just have a good time, you know, and I'm here to have some laughs. I think a lot of people sit down almost defiantly when they watch a special, and especially if it's a guy who's got some name value, and they go, this guy thinks he's funny, and they cross their arms and go, prove it to me. You know what I mean? And they sit there and they watch it with that sort of critical eye rather than entering it as just, I'm here to have a good time, and let's see if this guy can make me laugh, guy or gal can make me laugh.
Yeah, because I mean, how many times have you gone to a comedy show? There's seven people in the lineup, and like some people you don't really laugh at,
right?
But you see other people laughing.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm not saying you should laugh at everything everybody says, but like just go into it just with the idea of I'm here to have a good time, and not the mindset of a critic of this guy better be funny. You know what I mean? Those are two totally different mindsets, and for some reason the latter has become way too prevalent in the way people watch comedy in 2020, to me.
I agree completely. It's been, as a diehard fan of the industry, it's been fascinating to watch it. And I think I've seen some of the best comedy of my entire life the last couple of years as this has all been happening. But then the conversation around comedy, it's like there's like two different ecosystems happening. There's like the super high level of comedy, and then there's the very intense scrutiny of it as just like the temperature on everything else has really increased. But there's not much malice attached to the vast majority of it. I can't wait to come see you perform, man. Yeah. I'm very much looking forward to it.
I can't wait till I can get back to performing like a few nights a week.
I'm sure. He's Rami Makhlouf. Sam Acho going to join us a little after 4 o'clock. It's the Danny Parkin Show on The Score. We're going to talk to Sam Acho coming up in just a few minutes. He's going to join us just a little bit after 4 o'clock. Rami Makhlouf is in. Sad news to pass along. Adam Schefter reporting that Von McGlure, former Bears beat reporter, he was currently the NFL reporter for the Atlanta Falcons for ESPN, passed away in his apartment in Atlanta at the age of 48 years old. So very sad news to pass along. Von McGlure, according to Adam Schefter, dead at the age of 48. Rest in peace. And of course, our thoughts are with his friends and family. We'll talk to Sam Acho coming up just in a few minutes here on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.